So we have concluded the big book slash step portion of Friday. We are now going to hear a 30 to 50 minute story from two different people, starting with Mr. Bill Nick. So I met Bill when I had like zero time sober. He's the only person that I was in treatment with that stayed sober throughout that entire experience and is still sober today. Bill and I absolutely did not like each other for a very significant amount of time where we were at our little plantation at the Bridges of Hope. And Bill was actually my superior. There's like a structure there. And I was his... He could boss me around and tell me what to do, and that's fine. I've forgiven him for that. But over the past couple of years, I want to share a story first about Bill. I share this. I'm sure a few of you have probably heard it, but my favorite story about Bill was one day he was the garden chief, and and so I was his crew member, and so. One day, I was at that place where they were talking about earlier, that place that, like, I just wanted to kill myself. I didn't believe there was hope left in my life. And I came to Bill, and I said, "Hey, Bill, I need to talk to somebody." And he said, "Man, I'm an open book. You can talk to me about anything." And I was like, "I think I need to talk to somebody." And he was like, "No, you can tell me anything." And I'm like, okay. "Oh, I don't think I should do it." And he's like, said it again. He was like, "Tell me anything." And I said, "Okay, Bill." And we walked away from everybody. And I said, "Bill, I want to kill myself. I've been planning it. I want to do it." And he looks at me and he says, "Miles, you need to go talk to somebody." So if everybody knows Bill, knows that he is an array of sunshine on everybody's day. He's always smiling. He's always happy. He's always, you know, just ready to help anybody and everyone that comes his way. But in all reality, I saw Bill at a very hopeless, miserable state, and I've watched him blossom into a darker shaded flower. but he is a wonderful person, and I'm happy to say now he's probably one of my best friends, and I love him dearly, and I would call him with anything. And You're an awesome dude, man. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. All right. Bill.
Hey, I'm Bill, and I am a heroin addict. Hey, Bill. So, coming into these things, I always experience, like, every time I've told my story of, like, anxiety, extreme fear, and Brandon's put it the best way possible that I could describe, and it's like doing a shot of meth before I come up here. For hours going in, it's like, go. So it's going to take me a minute to kind of unwind and get on this thing. So I was separated from heroin and methamphetamine on August 2nd, 2016. I've had quite a many attempts at abstinence from drugs and alcohol. But I've never had any real sobriety until this time. I'll probably bounce around a lot, but so like I come from like a good middle class, upper level middle class family, man, and like I had a very good childhood, man. Like nothing serious going on. Like good parents, civil engineer, teacher, mother, older brother, older sister. No abuse growing up. You know, everything was pretty much handed to me, and life was going pretty well. But, like, being 6 or 7 years younger than my brother and sister, like, I don't know, like, I always looked up to them, especially my brother, you know. So, like, I tried to follow in their footsteps, right? They're both extremely intelligent. One is a mechanical engineer. One's a civil engineer. And, like, school came extremely easy to them. To me, it didn't come that easy, man. Like, I felt like there was something wrong with me because, like, I always had this perception of what I thought my parents wanted me to be at a very young age, or like they wanted me to be really good at sports because my dad always coached my sports. I was not good at sports, but my brother and sister were really well at it. They are extremely smart. You know, I struggled just to make B's in school. I mean, I worked my ass off to get B's. So, like, I had this perception that, like, I was not good enough at a very young age, right? You know, so, like I said, nothing bad in my childhood. It was a really good upbringing, really good family, and, you know, so, like, I can kind of see the internal condition, like, before I ever put drugs and alcohol into my body, you know? You know, I was the nerdy, shy kid that just wanted to, like, fit in and be liked, and, you know, when I got into middle school, like, I started experimenting with alcohol and marijuana, and, like, that changed the way that I felt immediately. I was able to, like, go and, like, hang out with this certain group of kids that, like, you know, this shit was exciting. These were the cool kids. They're getting fucked up. They're smoking cigarettes. You know, so, like, that's what it looked like, man. And, you know, so, like, my brother and sister, it was acceptable for us to drink and to smoke weed. You know, in my parents' house, they were okay with that. So, like, I fell in line with my brother and sister. Now, the thing is, you know, pretty sure my brother may be a high-functioning alcoholic, but, like, they were able to achieve things. They were able to go to college. They were able to obtain good jobs. For me, when this stuff came into my life, like, stuff started getting bad immediately. You know, I can remember, like, looking at my experience at the age of 14 with alcohol and seeing, looking back on it now, like, seeing the phenomenon of craving very real, right? So, like, I'd be the guy at a party drinking with everybody at 14 years old in ninth grade, and like everybody else would get drunk, they'd pass out, and I'd be the guy that would be up till the sun came up still drinking until the liquor was gone, right? And like I said, consequences started coming in. You know, sorry. So, at, like I said, at a young age, it was coming in, and it was getting bad, but, like, I was able to progress through high school, you know, and continue on with this way. So, when I say that heroin and methamphetamine, that is my master, right? And I can remember when I put Oxycontin into my body for the first time at the age of 16 years old, it was like, that's what I'm going to do every single day for the rest of my life. You know, my sister, I, like I said, I looked up to them. I would do a lot of things with her, and like she would take me to these shows, like at a very young age of like 14, to these Phish concerts and Widespread concerts, and like I fell into this mentality that like I'm going to do psychedelics, I'm going to smoke weed, I'm going to do drugs because this is cool to me, man. You know, I just wanted to fit in. Very quickly, this stuff like grabbed a hold of me, and like I was unable to shake it, right? So I would go through these phases where like, you know, I would put everything down and just stick to alcohol, just stick to marijuana. And then the opiates would always come back every single time. I can remember at the age of 21, man, I was at Georgia Southern and, I was actually doing fairly well, right? You know, and when I say fairly well, that means that, you know, I was not flunking out of school at the time. I went to Georgia Military College. I got a associate's degree from there. The first time that I kicked opiates was during my finals from getting my associate's degree, and I was able to make it through it somehow. I don't know how, you know, but it always would come back. I would get separated, and what I didn't realize at the time is, like, I didn't understand the disease of alcoholism at all. I didn't understand anything about the phenomenon of craving. I didn't understand the mental obsession. I always thought that if I just could get some abstinence from what I was doing, and I would be at school, or I would get the right job, or I would be with this girl, that everything would be okay, you know? And things would be for a little while. But I could never, like, deal with what was going on internally with me, which is something I wasn't able to recognize at that time. things transpired, and I ended up, you know, cocaine and a lot of opiates came into the picture while I was at Georgia Southern, and I ended up getting put on academic probation and just stopping going to classes, and I moved back to Augusta, and very quickly after that was the first time I ended up in treatment at the age of 21. So, like, I go to this place, it's 2 weeks long, and it is supposed to be a 12-step based treatment center. I think the only thing that happened while I was there was once a week we sat down and we would pass the big book around and read out of the big book. I guess it was supposed to be a big book study, but all it was people passing the book around in a circle. You know, so like I leave there and within 2 weeks I'm back to doing opiates and drinking and my life is in shambles again. I can remember they sent me home with a couple prescriptions of trazodone, and like it got so bad that like this is the first time that I actually had contemplated or even made an attempt on trying to commit suicide. So I took probably like 35 trazodones. I'm like, I'm going to kill myself. What ends up happening is I just sleep for about a day and a half, and you know, I wake up and go right back to it. You know, so my parents were trying to do the best they could with me, and like, there's a line, I think it's in More About Alcoholism. I don't know where it is. Anyways, but it's talking about their family is waiting for the day that they will assert their willpower and come out of the lethargy, right? You know? And, like, I can remember, like, as I was going through a big book study, one, like, my first pass through the steps and through this big book study is, like, writing ha-ha next to that. Because, like, I had a lot of willpower, man. Like, I was awaiting the day. My family was awaiting the day. My friends were awaiting the day. It never came. You know, so anyways, back to this suicide attempt. That was my first pass of treatment. But I was like, obviously the 12 steps aren't going to work for me because I went to this place that said they're a 12-step program, but all we did was pass the book around, right? I'd been to some meetings. You know, I never got a sponsor, never worked the steps, never did any of that because honestly, when I'd look at the word God on the wall, I was like, that's not going to work for me. So, like, my brother, like I said, was like one of my biggest role models growing up. So, like, he would, when my sister's friends would come over, he would sit there and argue and tell her religious friends why God wasn't real. So I adopted the same attitude at a very young age of God is not real, and I'm going to tell you exactly why he's not real. So when I look at the steps, it's like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. You know, and the thing is man, things continued to spiral out of control. A lot of periods were like, I was in a relationship with this female for a long time, and cocaine was very prevalent, and you know, we would do it together. And like, so when I look at the difference between the hard drinker or the hard user and the real alcoholic and the real drug addict, is she was able to stop doing cocaine. You know, she was able to take some Xanax, go to sleep, and put it down until the following weekend. What would happen with me is she would go to sleep. She would be passed out on her Xanax. I would steal her Xanax, take a few of them, grab her debit card, and I would be pulling money out of the ATM going to smoke crack. You know? And that's what it looked like for me, man. It was not pretty, and it got bad real quickly. And the thing is like, all right, so the first time I went to treatment, my family wanted me to go. I didn't really want to be sober. You know, I just wanted to get them off my back and maybe get away from the heroin and the opiates and just be able to drink and smoke weed successfully. So during all of this time, you know, I'm living with her. Like I said, we were together for 4 years. There was a lot of chaos. A lot of the times the cops were called. A lot of this external stuff that would show that my life was unmanageable. And that's what I always thought unmanageability was for a long time, was the external stuff. But I end up going back. I end up going back to treatment again because I burned it to the ground. She'd kicked me out so many times. Oh, boo-hoo, I'm sorry. I'm never going to do it again. And then here I am right again, stealing her debit card, going on another run. So I end up going to this place in Norcross called Narconon, which ended up being a Scientology-based treatment center, right? Again, this is, you know, me trying to get people off of my back. did I really want to be completely sober? Absolutely not. It's just like, I just need to get away from the crack cocaine. I just need to get away from the Oxycontin. I just need to get away from the heroin. And everything will be okay. Yeah, that was a weird experience. I don't know. It was strange. I ended up drinking while I was there, coming back home, and I was smoking crack within a matter of weeks. So during this time, you know, I'd moved back in with her, and you know, it was an extremely toxic relationship. Bless her heart, she wanted to be able to save me, and that just wasn't possible, right? So towards the end of the stay of us being together, I ended up getting 2 DUIs within 10 days of each other. And that's like when things, she was finally like, it's quits, get the fuck out. There I am at 20, maybe 6 years old, moving back in with my parents. No driver's license, no job, no nothing. But I'm able to manipulate them into, for a long time, paying for me to be on opiate maintenance drugs. You know, and that's a huge part of my story is, like, I could put all this other stuff down, but, like, I'm on these opiate maintenance drugs, and I'm like, all right, this is the solution. I'm going to be good. I'm going to taper off of it. Everything's going to be okay. And the benzos and the methamphetamine come in. So during this time before this, like I said, I'm going to jump back and forth because I'm scatterbrained, is I ended up one night when I was going to cop crack in the hood. I was shot 3 times while trying to cop. So, like, I pull up, like, I'd never been to this place before. Obviously, like I said, I was very entitled. I had a BMW, dressed real nice, like baby blue polo pants, a yellow button-down polo shirt, in a housing project to people I'd never seen. And of course, they pull out a gun and they're like, get in the trunk of your car. No, that's not going to happen. They shoot me once in the stomach, twice in the back of my left leg as I go to run. And I, the last thing I remember is making it out to this highway, waving down this car, and you know, the ambulance showing up after, I guess, these people called the ambulance, and then waking up in the hospital, right? So, like, I've been given sufficient reasons to stop or moderate so many times in my life. Being shot, being kicked out of this girl's house, you know, going to jail countless times for DUIs, disorderly conducts, minor possessions of alcohol. Being sitting in these jails and wholeheartedly meaning that I'm never going to use again when I leave there. And within a matter of days, if not weeks, I'm back to using. I didn't understand what was going on with me, and I had came to a place where I was convinced that I was going to have, like I said, be on some kind of maintenance drug the rest of my life. So things got real dark from there, man. Like this girl that I was madly in love with, you know, had broken up with me. I'm living at my parents' house. I don't have a license. I didn't have one for almost 7 years. But I'm able to continue to manipulate my family, you know. I'm able to continue because, like, you know, and the thing is they were trying to do the best they could with what they were given, right? They were just unable to just let me go on my own for a very long time and just be like, you need to fucking figure this out yourself. So during this time, like, you know, like I said, and when I look at, like, really, like, my first step experience of was not even then yet, because, like, I went through this period of, you know, I would kick the opiates. I could make it 30 days, sometimes 45. And, like, I would continuously pick back up. You know, that feeling of, like, nothing was right on the inside. What is wrong with me? Like, this is never going to be right. How the fuck do I get sober? And I would go back out. And a lot of times it would be with other substances, and it would be right back to the opiates. Things got real, real dark towards the end of those 7 years without a license, to where, like, IV methamphetamine and heroin were in the picture every single day. I'm sitting there living in a hotel room. My dad's picking me up in the morning before he goes to work to take me to the methadone clinic. I'm coming back to this day's inn. Brandon's there doing weird gay shit and fucking whatever the hell he was doing, man. And dude, it was really, really dark and really, really bad, man. And I, you know, he had gotten whatever charges he had coming, and he was like, "I'm going to this place called the Bridges of Hope, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'll be there in a couple weeks. I'm gonna go detox. You know, I'll see you in a few weeks." You know, and he's like, "Dude, this dude's full of shit. He ain't gonna show up there." So that's what I did, man. Like, I go to this place to detox, and I'm a straight asshole, and I'm like, "No, I'm gonna go sit in a hotel room in Statesboro, Georgia, and just go through the methadone withdrawals." I'm in that hotel room, I would say 90% of the time, with my dad, who is taken off work, sitting in there making sure that I don't like run off and go and do whatever I do. So 16 days pretty much of the worst withdrawals I've ever gone through before in my life. And then what I do? I go to the Bridges of Hope. You know, and for people that don't know anything about it, man, it's like a big book boot camp. It's a 150-acre pine tree farm in the middle of nowhere. You know, and it's one of the most beautiful and best experiences I've ever had. Not that time. Not that time, was it? So, like, they start, you know, this is a 12-step-based place. You know, you are going to work the steps while you're there. You're also going to be working while you're there. And I was, dude, I was miserable. I still, at that point, I think I had other alternatives, right? I hadn't got down to those two alternatives. I wasn't convinced. Now, at that time, there was a different manager, and there are people that absolutely got sober there. Brandon got sober there during this time frame. But I was unable to hear that message at this time, right? I'm there 90 days. It's absolutely miserable. It's right before my first pass, and I remember I was sitting in this big book study, which was more of a 12 and 12 study by this guy, Mr. Cavan, and like, it's time for me to go. I'm absolutely fucking miserable. Now, during this whole process of going to the office and asking them to take me to the bus station in Augusta, because that's what they do, they, you know, we're taking your ass to the bus station, and you can figure it out from there. The assistant manager there said something, you know, and I forget what story it is, but it says, "If you have an alcoholic mind, the time and place will come that you will pick up again." And he said something along those lines, and I did not realize it at that time, but he was prophesizing at that time that I was going to pick up. I wasn't convinced of it yet. I leave there thinking that I can assert my willpower, stay on guard. I'm going to stay away from these people, these places, these things. I'm going to get a job. I was working out at the time. I felt good. I looked good. But internally, I was miserable. You know, I think like I did steps 1, 2, and 3, and I was given a 4-step packet, but I had no idea what this was about. I didn't know about the 3-part disease, right? I absolutely wasn't willing to believe in God. So what the hell is even a 3rd step at that point? You know, they handed me this 4-step. I look at it. I think I may have written one name down for a resentment. And by that time, it was time for me to go. I made it 2 weeks. You know, when we look at those mental blank spots that they talk about in the big book of uncertain times we're unable to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the humiliation and the suffering of a week or a month or 90 days prior, when you're literally dying of this thing, of so much stuff, living out of a trap hotel, selling drugs, having people bust up in the room, having guns in your face, and a Roxy 30 was put in front of me. No thought process whatsoever. No decision was made on my part. It was just put into my body, you know. And it got bad for about another year and a half to 2 years. Real bad, real dark. You know, during this time, I was able to get my license back through getting an interlock system, so I did have that going for me. Now, I ended up getting 3 transaction fraud charges in 3 different counties, 2 different states put on me. by the person that I looked up to my entire life, my brother. Now, I had stolen debit cards, stolen credit cards, and used them from probably about the age of 17 up until the age of 30 with no charges pressed against me whatsoever by my parents. My brother finally said, fuck that. You're going to sit your ass in jail. I'm pressing any felony charges against you, you know. And at the time, I was so all boo-hoo, poor me, get me out. But, like, when I think about that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization of sitting in the back of that cop car at my parents' house, my parents out there, my best friend that I grew up with bought the house next door to my parents, him, his wife, and his three little children sitting out there watching me get arrested and hauled off to jail again, you know. And it's crazy thinking, like, oh, poor me, man. And, like, that experience, man, was extremely humiliating, but it's happened many, many times. So while I'm in this detox center in Columbia County Jail, like, there's a detox ward where they keep the protective custody people, you know. So, like, I'm in this cell with this guy, and he's probably maybe like 55. He looked like he was 70, and he was a heroin addict. And I remember him sitting there saying that when we were talking about this, and I'm like, oh man, I'm going to go to this treatment center. I'm going to see if my parents will bomb me out. Man, I can't have these felony charges. But I remember him sitting there and saying, the only way that you're going to get sober and stay sober is through Jesus Christ. And, like, I don't know about all that. But I can remember in that moment being open-minded for the first time that maybe there's something to that. So we come up with this deal that if I go back to the Bridges of Hope, my parents will end up bonding me out. Now, it ended up being this process where, like, I was bonded out of one jail after being there for 30 days, picked up by the next. Taken to a different county, sat there for another 30 days, bonded out of that one, picked up from a different state, taken there, bonded out of there. Big process to get me out. And I've made a firm resolution that I'm never using again. I'm going to go straight to detox. Well, not at that point, it wasn't detox, wasn't in the picture, but I was going to go straight to this place called Penfield Christian Recovery Center, right? So, like, it started off with me going to the Bridges of Hope, but it's a six-month program. Penfield is 6 weeks long. So the manipulative person that I am, I pitched this idea that I need to go to a place that's more spiritual because it's religious-based. It wasn't a matter of 3 days outside of there that I was back running. You know, I decided that I was never going to use again, and there I am back to shooting heroin and meth. And I went through this, like, place of, for like a month of, I'm supposed to be calling these people, setting up a time for me to come in to go to this place. And it was probably about a month and a half that I was back out there, man. And I had burnt every bridge. There was nothing left. I came to this place where, like, I wasn't getting no more money. Nothing left for me to steal out of my parents' house. My car wasn't in my name, so I couldn't get rid of that. You know, and finally, like, I was like, all right, I'm going to have to go to detox. I'm not going to go and withdraw at this place and go through that, right? So I go to this detox center up in Alpharetta, and they're going to transport me to Penfield Christian Recovery, which they did. And I get there, and so, like, when I look at the seventh step prayer, right? My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of the usefulness of my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. So when I look at, you know, I want you to have all of me, the good and the bad. I want you to take the assets and the defects, you know. And like, the thing is, like, remove every single defect of character which stands in my way of being useful to you and my fellows. So there may be some defects that are still useful to God, right? So I go to this Penfield Christian Recovery. I'm going through the intake process, the counselor. I'm sure I wasn't the most pleasant person to be around just getting out of detox, but he was extremely extreme dickhead. At least I perceived him that way. So like, and I can look at this guy's defects of whatever was going on with him that day, pushing me out of this place to go do exactly where I was supposed to go. I ended up walking away from that place because my parents had came to meet me to drop a bunch of my stuff off. I ended up walking away from this place, walking down the road. They said, "You're on your own." And something came over me about a mile down the road where I was like, "Dude, what the fuck am I doing? Let's go back to the Bridge of Hope." You know, so I ended up going back there, man. And I remember, like, walking in, and the old assistant manager was the manager then at that time. And, like, I'm sitting in the office doing my intake, absolutely miserable. And he's like, "Man, we're going to get you well. You know, we're going to get you recovered. Recovered." You know, and I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, are we recovering? We can get recovered? You know, so, like, I'm sure I've heard this stuff before. I'm sure I've heard all this stuff. But, like, he brought a passion and excitement to recovery that I had never seen, right? He made it look attractive to me. So, like, I go through this set of steps, and I'm taking through the book. And, like, he's, like, the biggest thing he would preach was, like, find your truth. You are here to find your truth. Find out if you have this thing or not. You know, so I would throw my experience into the book. I would see if I have this thing or not. And I was easily able to hook up with the phenomenon of craving, like I talked about earlier. I've experienced it with alcohol. I've experienced it with crack cocaine. I've experienced it with heroin. I've experienced it with meth. That when I put it into my body, that I go on a run and I don't know when I'm going to stop. It's usually when I'm put behind bars, I pass out, there's no more money left, whatever the circumstances may be. And I can look at my experience of the mental obsession, right? Very easily. Make it 30 days, the obsession's on me super strong. I wasn't convinced about God yet, man, though. But, like, you know, it was presented to me in step two that all I had to do was be willing. That's all I needed was a willingness, you know. So, like, go on to the bitter end or accept spiritual help. So I was convinced of my hopelessness in step one. So I was like, I don't want to go on to the bitter end. Maybe I'll try spiritual help this time. Or I was to going to use spiritual help at that time. You know, and dude, I was so shot out from so many years of IV meth use that, like, I didn't understand any of the literature or what was being said to me when I was going through this. They painted a picture of the third step decision as you're going to make a decision to work steps 4 through 9, you know, or 4 through 12. And I could get down with that. I didn't understand the selfishness and self-centeredness being the root of my trouble. I didn't understand being an agent for God. I didn't understand manufacturing my own misery until I sat down and put pen to paper and wrote that fourth step and looked at that last column of what my mistakes were. And same thing over and over and over again. I was easily able to let go of my resentments when I did that. Now, I went through a 60-day period of getting there and dropping a fifth step where I was absolutely fucking miserable. And this was probably during this time where that thing happened with Miles. So, like, I'm sitting on this fourth step, and, like, I don't know what came upon me to finally just be like, I'm going to get this thing done. So I do this fourth step. I go and sit. I drop the fifth, and I go and spend that hour with God, man. And I'm laying in this hammock on this beautiful piece of property, looking up at the birds flying over and the trees floating back and forth, and, like, just having this feeling that, like, I'm going to be all right, you know? And that's where, like, that catapulted me through the rest of it, because, like, I wasn't convinced in steps 1, 2, 3, or 4. I don't know that I was convinced in 5, but I had this feeling that I was going to be all right at that point. There was no aha moment. There was no, like, oh, that was so relieving. So much relief came from this. It was just, I'm going to be all right, you know. So I go through this process, and I go and make some amends, man, and I did not. So, like, the way that you're taking through the steps there is, like, they have senior residents take you through steps 1, 2, 3. You write a fourth step. They have a different senior resident, maybe the same one, listen to your fifth step. I had a guy that had 6 months sober that was 20 years old listen to my fifth step. Not much feedback at all, but it was sufficient for me to get unblocked from God at the time, right? They do a workshop for 6 and 7. In the way that I look at it now is, like, I look at steps 5 through 8 being a smooth transition, maybe one sitting, right? But that's not the way to work, man. It was a couple weeks before I did 6 and 7. Wrote this 8-step amends list, and I didn't seek a whole lot of guidance on before I went to make a lot of these amends when I first. But I remember the first amend that I went to make, like I said, I didn't seek advice, was to an ex-girlfriend, right? An ex-girlfriend that I was in active addiction with before I got sober, right? And my motives were extremely screwed up. I was going to make amends, and I was going to sleep with her. And something happened in that process of actually making that amends with her that, like, I was shaking going in. And I don't know, man. Like, my motives completely changed when, like, I sat down and started talking to this girl. I had never felt that way before in my life. You know, like, this guy would always talk about, that's the good dope, that's the good dope, that's the good dope, man. And that, like, feeling right there, man, was better than any high that I had had for a while, man. And, like, I wanted to continue to do that, and I continued making amends. And I went on with the rest of the work while I'm there in 10, 11, 12. And, you know, but, yeah, I'm on this farm. So what can I really do with 12 except carry the message back to the new guys that are there, taking them through steps 1, 2, 3, listening to fifth steps. That's as much as I could do at that point. I wasn't really doing much with meditation. I didn't really know the mechanics of a 10th step, even though I'd been taken through the book. But so, like, I come up on my fifth month there, right, and I just got back from I was about to go on my last pass, and I had been bringing to prayer, like, what am I going to do? Am I going to stay here longer? Am I going to go to a sober living, or am I just going to go back to Augusta? And I made the decision while I was on that pass that I was going to go back to Augusta. Well, God had other plans for me. I get back from that pass, and Mr. Bill, the manager, approached me and said, we want you to stay on as staff. I had never thought any process whatsoever about I'm going to work in the recovery field. It never crossed my mind. But I knew in that moment that everything in my mind was telling me, no, go back to Augusta. I don't want to make another commitment of being here six more months as a staff member. I don't want to be here. But I knew in my gut that prayer had been answered, man. And it was a cool experience of being able to work and start this path of, you know, being able to work in this field, right? Some time transpired, and there was a lot of lack of authenticity at this point. So, like, you're going to learn the literature and the big book very well while you're there, right? You're going to be able to parrot this shit in meetings. Am I acting it in my actual life? Am I living by what's in this book? Am I living around the principles, which are the steps? Yes and no. I left there at a year sober and moved up here at the opportunity to, you know, work where I work now, feeling like I was dying on the inside. I wasn't doing anything with 10. I mean, yeah, I was like saying the third step prayer every morning when I woke up, but there was no meaning or depth or weight behind it. You know, I had a sponsee while I was working at the Bridges, but I wasn't showing up for them. You know, that selfishness was still there, absolutely. And man, like, I got up here, and thank God that I did, man. Like, I really quickly learned, like, what it was like to have a fellowship of people around me, man. You know, these two guys sitting right here brought me in. They threw me into sponsorship. They threw me into service. They threw me into commitments at a home group. You know, and I very quickly learned what this thing was all about, you know. So, like, I look at being beyond human aid in step one, right? I'm able to see that. Step two, you know, for a guy like me, borderline atheist agnostics, it's like, if I can't get down to two alternatives, I'm going, and I have a third one, I'm going to take that third one every single freaking time. Every single time. You know, and that's where, like, my experience in that surrender came in of being able to see that. You know, I was sitting with a friend of mine one day, and we were talking, and, like, you know, I didn't really understand, like, I got that we get blocked from God, unblocked from God in steps 4 through 9, but, like, I didn't really understand what this thing's about. And Brandon was talking about it earlier, man, and we agnostics, it just clicked with me, man. It was just this aha moment that, like, what it was kind of about, man, is, like, I was searching out there for God. Even at a year sober, I was searching out there, you know? We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but He was there. He was as much a fact as we were. The great reality, capitalized, meaning God, was deep down within us. In the last analysis, only there that He may be found. And it clicked with me of, like, dude, I need to be searching within myself. You know, and that's when the meditation came in. You know, that's when, like, I understood what the 10th step was about of, like, why do these defects block me from God, right? Because this resentment, this fear, this selfishness, this dishonesty blocks me from y'all. Because God's within me, God's within y'all, right? The more connected I am with the people in this room, the more connected with people, the more connected I am with this. The only thing that has ever been able to keep me sober. You know, so I don't know. It's just this moment of, like, holy shit, you know. And, like, when I started taking on sponsees and actually being able to show up for them. And have a sponsee to watch him, you know, be in the infant stages of sponsorship, you know. After going back out, coming back and working with him again, man, and seeing, like, that he wasn't convinced. He had to go get convinced, you know. And that's okay, man. I had to go and get convinced a lot of times. You know, Tarek was talking about earlier, or Carl was talking about, like, the internal unmanageability, those bedevilments, the trouble with personal relationships, being a prey to misery, depression, you know, feeling of uselessness, being full of fear, man, and, like, they're going to come back up in sobriety, you know. And I'm going through a new set of steps right now, and, like, I just got done with this bedevilment exercise, and, like, seeing all of it down on paper at one time. This is stuff that I was able to see, stuff that I was aware of, you know, but, like, having it all down on a piece of paper at one time, it's like, man, this work does not stop. It does not stop. This thing comes back on me, you know. So... the cool thing is the 10th step promises, man, being safe and protected, being in a position of neutrality, you know, like, I'm no longer fighting the drink or the drug problem today, right? I get to go and do cool stuff. I get to go to concerts with friends where there's heavy drug and alcohol use all around me, and not be tempted with it. When I do, recoil from it, man, and... you know, I have genuine relationships with people that absolutely care about me from the bottom of their heart that I can call and take anything to. And I have a group of 4 or 5, maybe 6 people that, like, I talk to on a daily basis. They know what's going on with me. When I'm unwilling to let them know what's going on with me, they can see in my face what's really going on with me and call me on it, you know. But, like, I was a God hater that has a relationship with God today. How fucking cool is that? Yeah. You know? I am a guy that had serious resentments towards hypocritical Christians that got to sit down and write inventory, real in-depth inventory, and really get to look at it and read it and share it with 4 of my close friends, 2 of them which are Christians, and get them to lay into me and show me the truth of what was really going on, you know, that I push my beliefs on other people, you know. That was a really cool experience, man, and it really opened up my eyes. Who am I to say, like, whatever, you know? You know, yeah, there are a lot of times where I sit on resentment too long. There are a lot of times where I fall short on doing an evening review. There are times where I'll ask God to remove it, you know. But I don't pick up the phone and talk to anybody about it. There are times where I don't turn my thoughts over to helping somebody else. But what I do is I continuously do this stuff. I fall short in areas. I get back on track, you know. No one does this perfect. What I do know is I have a great relationship with my family today. I have a great relationship with my friends today. And it's all as a direct result of hitting this surrender, becoming willing, and working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I've tried it my way. I've tried the girls. I've tried the abstinence. I've tried the opiate maintenance drugs. I've tried going back to school. I went to cosmetology school one time thinking that that was going to be the solution. Yeah, that happened. Yes, we'll throw that out there. Went to cosmetology school thinking that that was going to be the answer. Yeah, that's out there. And then I left. So technically, I'm a beauty school dropout. Yeah, there we go. But nah, man, this has been a cool experience. I've seen so many people in this room like go after this thing, and some of my best friends in this room, our best friends are in this room, man. But it's a result of continuing to do this. I'm convinced in my first step, so I continue working steps 10, 11, 12. And I fall short on looking at my original ninth step amends at times, but then somebody brings it to my attention, what are you doing with your ninth step amends? And I get back on it. I think that's all I got.
Yeah.